The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the waterlogged heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. I believe today's the 23rd.
You are correct.
June. I can read. Take that. but then I was in that generation that we actually did learn how to read in school.
And there's a lot to be said for that. It's important. Although anymore.
Although anymore with Siri and you know, who named what?
And no, web
I'll come in again.
Lol. Rotful.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to PID Radio for this week. And boy, it's been a month since we've done a show. And
has it been only a month? Boy, it feels like a long. It's been a long month. A lot of stuff going on, including throwing out my knee, which is still hurting.
It is. Yeah, it's one of those things. The warranty has expired, and now you can no longer trade in for parts.
No, well, actually, that day's coming.
Yeah.
You got enough money, you can trade in for parts today.
Yeah.
And they may not be totally human, but who cares if that part has grown in a peg?
Yeah.
Have you seen that story?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, let's dive right in.
We'll dive right in. Apparently, Japanese researchers are using stem cells in the embryos of animals. Pigs being one that's really been thrown out there as a big possibility, with the idea that when the animal is killed, slaughtered, that the organs would be mostly human. Hmm. At least that's the hope, putting those stem cells into the embryo and having it grow pretty much human stuff inside of it. Oh, hey, heart transplant, got one. Let's just go kill the pig. Bacon for everybody. Not you, heart transplant recipient. No, bacon's for you.
So the question then becomes, do the pigs have to declare their willingness to donate on their driver's licenses?
Oh, well, that's a really good question, because there are some that would fight for those pigs' rights.
This is what's really weird. We have clearly stepped
into
a...
We've just crossed into the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, we obviously have, because we're living in a world where, as Wesley J. Smith, whose name we mentioned frequently here on the program, is writing very well at his Human Exceptionalism blog at National Review Online. Read it, bookmark it, go back to it often.
Read it and weep.
Yeah, read it and weep is right, because he's documenting what is clearly a drive in bioethics to declare other species on planet Earth essentially human for the purposes of legal proceedings.
Well, declaring them sentient.
Declaring them sentient.
Self-aware, therefore they have a right.
They're entitled to
rights.
Yes, exactly. So extending what we would consider, us old fuddy-duddies would consider human rights to non-sentient, in our view, species. But even beyond that, you know, taking it to the level of extending rights to inanimate things like rivers.
The ad that we see on, is it on Hulu? Yeah, I think it's on Hulu.
Right.
The organization that is representing, you know, the planet, because Mother Earth needs a
legal
good lawyer.
Yeah, needs a good lawyer. And, you know, when you see that ad at first, I really couldn't tell whether it was a parody or not.
No, I don't think it was.
But it's not a joke. I mean, it may be a joke, but not in the sense that they intend, or not in the sense that we would prefer. But
it
does look like a sketch that you would see on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Mother Earth needs a good lawyer. And they're serious, and that's the scary thing. These people are serious, and
because they can make tons of money suing on behalf of rivers and canyons.
And there are some who are looking at it, I'm sure, just from the prospect of a new and exciting market I mean, you know, when you're in business development, that's one of your things. You look for other ways that your service or product can be used. It's like, well, let's see, we lawyers have pretty much used up all of the available humans for clientele. I know, let's sue on behalf of apes. Hey, let's go even better. Let trees, rivers, why not? You know, and
Because I just saw Planet of the Apes, and I just don't want to go there.
Yeah,
because so, I mean, if you lose,
but
those orangutans.
This sounds almost too weird to be true. And sadly, when you bring up topics like this among friends, and even among fellow believers in church on Sunday morning, they think, well, come on, this is so ridiculous. This is so out there. This can't possibly be any threat to our worldview.
I would say even more so if you're talking to fellow believers. Don't you think?
I would say so. Because it is just so far removed from the type of thought that most of us engage in. I mean, it seems like a joke, but as Wesley Smith is documenting, this is being given very serious thought in the halls of academia and bioethics. And what it comes down to is this: it is denying the exceptionalism of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It is denying what the Bible tells us was God's order for for his creation. We were created as his imagers on earth, to use the phrasing, to put it the way Mike Heiser would put it, created in his image to serve in his capacity or as his representative, as his regents over planet Earth. And if you take away that exceptionalism and make us just one more creature here on the planet, well, you are essentially putting a thumb in God's eye.
You could even argue that it is a fulfillment of prophecy, because we see in prophecy, and I know that it is, this passage is not always interpreted this way, but when we're told that Daniel is told that there will be this age, the golden age, and then there'll be the iron age, mm-hmm. and then there will be the brass age, then the iron age, and talking about the future of the Roman Empire following Nebuchadnezzar, which is followed by the Greek Empire, Medo-Persian, which is followed by the Greek, which is followed by the Romans, which is followed by the toes,
right.
10 toes, but it says, and they shall mingle their seed.
Yeah, and
so you get into seed. What the heck is that?
Yeah, and who are they?
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the big questions. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And is it an echo of Genesis 6? And if that is true,
yes,
then doing this sort of research is nothing more than behaving the same way fallen angels did back in Genesis 6. This is a dangerous road to take. Regardless of how you may feel about human exceptionalism, which I absolutely believe that we are exceptional.
Yes.
Is this a crazy thing to do? Yes, it is. It's dangerous. Let's go down the road of what sort of diseases might a pig host bring to the table of that recipient.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've talked about the swine flu that's been in.
Exactly. Would that recipient be more likely to get it, because that recipient's probably taking some sort of immunosuppressants?
Right, to keep his body from rejecting the new organs. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the organ that he's trying very hard not to reject just may reject him.
Well, you know, and that's interesting. And this hits kind of close to home, because, as you know, 8 years ago, my father was on immunosuppressants of a sort.
Yes.
As part of his treatment for chronic leukemia. Leukemia, which may not have ever shortened his lifespan, according to his doctor, but because his immune system was compromised, a virus that 85% or something like that, about 85% of American adults have been exposed to, went active in his brain, caused a lesion in his brain, and killed him. A virus that, interestingly enough, is called the JC virus.
Yeah.
But if you've got a human future in which we're swapping organs in that are coming from, you know,
other species,
yeah, that there will be a greater use of those immunosuppressants, would there not?
Well, one would expect so, unless, of course, they can argue that the body would not reject this. Say you need a heart. Well, a pig can grow up pretty quickly. So I say to you, okay, it looks like, I may even say to you, you know, I've looked at your genes, I've looked at your genome, and according to that, within the next 5 years, you're going to need a heart transplant. So let's just go ahead and plan on that now. So I've got, you know, a herd of swine over here, and that they're absolutely, you know, demon free. Made sure of that. Herd of swine, demon free. and we're going to take some of your stem cells, which actually all I need is your skin cell to do it.
Yeah.
Because Japanese researchers have been able to turn a skin cell into what's called a pluripotent cell. In other words, it has the potential to become anything. So we'll take those stem cells, which is what a stem cell is. It's a pluripotent cell. And we'll inject it into the embryo of one of these sows over here. And when she has her baby, that baby will be born with your heart. How about that? And it's only $59,000. And that's just for the heart. Yeah. I mean, the actual process and my fee and the pathologist.
The more frightening thing about this, though, and this is where and we touched on this in the last program about how the concept of human cloning is now being rebranded. Where they're not calling it cloning, but what they're doing is actually cloning. And you just described the process. You take a human skin cell and you can turn it into...
That's exactly what you can do.
You turn it to an embryo, and from the embryo, then you harvest the stem cells, which means, of course, you're killing the embryo.
Anyway, well, theoretically.
Theoretically. But you remember the Ewan McGregor movie, The Island?
Oh, very much.
Yeah. That's, I think, that's something else to watch for.
Yeah, growing the parts.
In a clone. Right. Yeah. Right. If you've not
seen clone is horror.
Yeah. Going to make him further. Was that the movie with that really bad chase scene with Jeb Brown?
He's going like 5 miles an hour.
In the golf cart. And yeah, I'm going to get you. Yeah, it was, mystery science theater fodder. But the movie The Island, if you've not seen it, is worth a view just to get a glimpse of what might be. Certainly no evidence that this is taking place now, but I doubt if it were taking place that those behind it would make it known to us. Essentially, it was creating embryos for clients who had the money and wanted to create what you might call the ultimate life insurance program for their children or for themselves. Won't go any further than that if you want to watch the movie, but it's worth catching. But that is... one of the reasons we do what we do on PAD Radio. I mean, there is something out there. I mean, if we take Paul at his word that we're wrestling not against flesh and blood, we're not wrestling against human opponents here in our daily walk as Christians, but against ranks of angels, powers, principalities, thrones, dominions.
Yes.
And while they may not be inclined to repeat the error of the angels described in Genesis 6, whose fate was then described by Peter and Jude in the New Testament, you know, put in chains into Tartarus until the judgment, they may be influencing human actors, maybe even without the knowledge of the human actors, to recreate the sort of genetic tampering experiments that took place in Genesis chapter 6. And I think we as Christians have a duty to take a look at what's going on around us and try to understand the times that we're in through a scriptural lens.
Well, let me say this. In the Old Testament, we see over and over God speaking to prophets through their dreams. Sometimes he even speaks to national leaders through their dreams. Was it Nebuchadnezzar or was it one of the others that approached Daniel and said, I need you to interpret this dream because nobody else will do it because I'm not going to tell them what the dream is. Well, starting with that. Okay.
Nebuchadnezzar, but then also Belshazzar later on.
Exactly. Right. So we know that dreams can be communications from a realm that we can't see. Mm-hmm. I would say that the spiritual realm does the same thing. The fallen realm does the same thing. They speak to us in dreams. There's a scientist named Kekula that I've talked about in my speeches, my talks before, who came up with the form for benzene ring. And he said he saw snakes that were round and snakes eating their own tails.
Ouroboros.
Who were essentially showing the form that the double bonds take. They go back and forth along this ring, and hence the benzene ring. That's the foundational element of many molecules within the body, and some of them are steroids, other communication hormones that are absolutely important within the body. They also form part of the building blocks of DNA, which is why I get into that. But my point is that science for many hundreds of years have had points where a great revelation comes along through a dream. So maybe the fallen angels are communicating ways to mix human and animal forms, because honestly, there is a barrier against it. God put a barrier. Human cells and animal cells only will receive certain communications. In other words, if human sperm is introduced to an animal egg, it's not going to happen because the animal egg says, don't know you, wrong communication, wrong password, you're not getting in.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we're bypassing the need for a password.
Azazel sent me.
Come on in. Wow. Oh,
that's all right then. So if what we do strikes you as a little weird or sci-fi-ish, there is a reason for our madness, if you will.
Yeah, if this is your first PID radio,
right.
Boy, did you pick a winner to come in on.
Well, and this is why we discuss the things that we do with the people that we talk to, and that we'll be talking to at the Prophecy Summit coming up at Pikes Peak.
Yeah, it's only about a month away.
Yeah, July 25, 6, 7, well, 6, 7, and 8. We're going out a day early to get the equipment set up. We're actually having to send our equipment out ahead of us in advance, so we're praying for the postal service.
I'm going to be leaving soon because my knee is so bad, it's going to take me that much longer to get through the airport.
Yeah, I can't get through security anymore. We're hearing this strange noise as you're walking, Mr. Gilbert. It's just my knee. I can't help it.
She's making a clicking sound.
Yes.
That's her knee.
So, we'll be telling you more about that as we get there. This has been sold out for months, so...
It sold out within a couple of weeks.
But you can watch live stream on the internet this year.
Isn't that the coolest?
Yeah.
And it's a very reasonable price. What is it, $50?
$50 gets you the live stream. There's a link right at the top of the webpage at PIDradio.com, so you can sign up for that there. So it won't be the same as being there, but we understand that travel expenses being what they are... time commitments being what they are, family commitments being what they are. And I think, let me double check this, but I am
almost... I think it gives you 1 month of on demand.
Yes, exactly.
Well.
That was the thing I was going to say.
I read your mind.
Yes, that's we share a brain, actually.
It
depends on who needs it on any given day.
You
can watch when it's convenient for your schedule, which is really the nice thing. And kudos to Prophecy in the News and our good friend Sam Miller for helping to set this up. Sam of multimedia.com there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah, check it out. And if it fits your budget, then consider doing it. Because, again, you can go back and watch it. And with topics like the one Sharon will be discussing, you will probably need to watch it two or three times in order to let it sink in. I've heard her talk a couple of times now, and I still don't get most of it. So,
My favorite was the picture that someone took of
Rob Skiba.
Rob Skiba when he was listening to me.
Turned into a meme
and it
poster.
Was, please bring back kitten with string.
Sharon had used kitten as a string with an example, and somebody turned it into a meme poster. Rob and Sheila, we love you guys.
I'm sure he understood nearly everything I said. He's a smart kid.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Well, there's a lot going on in the world out there, and a lot of it related to, I would say, the wars and rumors of wars that Jesus warned us about 2,000 years ago. We've heard since our last broadcast that... Syrian President Bashar Assad has crossed the red line. He has finally done it. He's crossed the red line. He was on double secret probation before, and now he's really in trouble. The claim is that he has used sarin gas on his own people, and the possibility exists that the claim is absolutely true. It would, and I hate to
there
be
were,
so skeptical.
There were pictures, weren't they?
Well, they've actually gotten biopsies of victims and were able to test for the presence of sarin gas.
No, I meant online. Weren't there some pictures that were shown of one or two victims? And the reason I bring this up is because we rarely anymore get any kind of proof from the Obama administration.
Yeah.
This little bit of proof that came out, if I'm remembering correctly, was maybe only one guy. But it was so minor. It's like, how do I know that this really happened?
Well, the claim is, again, that they've taken biopsies of victims and have been able to test for the presence of sarin gas, and they've got multiple samples. However, they've also admitted that the chain of evidence has been corrupted, so they can't document who handled the samples and document exactly. In other words, in an American court of law, they would not stand up to scrutiny.
Right.
But the intelligence services of the United States feel pretty certain, or at least they say they feel pretty certain, that this is what's going on in Syria, that the Syrian government is, in fact, using sarin gas against the rebels. Now, as I've said before, I hate to be so skeptical of our own government when it tells us something, especially something as potentially monumental as this, monumental because it could lead us into a war in the Middle East. But we remember Colin Powell having to go out, and I think, honestly, this is why he didn't stick around for a second term.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he really wanted to do it, but his sense of loyalty was such that he went out there anyway and did his best to sell a bill of goods to the United Nations.
His little pixelated image that he said, we're pretty sure right. that this right here is a...
And this, what I'm holding up here, this isn't actually a centrifuge tube, but this is what one would look like, or whatever it was. It was sad. And unfortunately, we know now that that our government is capable of such things. So how do we know that this is true? We don't. We have to trust what we've been given or not trust it as we are led. But point being, the administration has said now that we will provide military assistance to the Syrian rebels.
Military assistance being boots on the ground?
Weaponry. But light weaponry. But again, we come back to the previous
drones.
Point. How do we know what we're being told is actually really real?
Haven't we been supplying weaponry to the rebels for a while?
Oh, no, because that would be wrong. The American public wouldn't. It's not constitutional. Yeah, right. The Congress has abdicated its role in the system of checks and balances that were intended by the framers of the Constitution, and allowed the presidency, and not just President Obama, but President Bush before him. In fact, most presidents since World War II. I mean, we entered Vietnam without an official congressional declaration of war, to the best of my knowledge. And even when Congress then did try to hold the Obama administration's feet to the fire over Libya and our participation in the conflict there, it didn't change anything. The president just said, well, I'm the president. You can't tell me what to do. We need to get rid of that bad guy. And then, of course, that ultimately resulted in the tragic deaths of our ambassador and several of his security staff there in Benghazi, Syria. So, I mean, things worked out so well in Libya. How could Syria possibly go wrong?
Syria has to have been on the table for a long, long time.
Yeah,
who was it? We talked about this
General
before.
Wesley Clark.
Yes.
I should have had that audio clip. There should be like an evergreen file here on a little soundbite program. I will work on that because that's an audio bite that needs to be
repeated and repeated. Yes. Yeah. Also, it needs repeating is the Eisenhower warning against the military industrial complex, which I know that all our listeners, they're all familiar with that. But it is something that President Eisenhower was well aware of. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's we've got guys like George Soros who have not only business reasons, but personal reasons for wanting to fell certain dictators, wanting to change the head of certain countries and put a person that plays ball in, the place of that person. And this brings me to something else that's going on that the Obama administration is involved in, not only Syria, Egypt, Turkey.
Turkey.
There are demonstrations going on in Turkey that we're told are over a park. But George Soros and his association with the Jamestown Foundation have been busy in the North Caucasus region, which is technically part of the Russian Federation,
right,
and trying to take down areas like Georgia and Ukraine, the Ossetia region, all of those areas around the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea?
Yeah.
Oil and gas-rich regions that are very important to the military-industrial complex. There is, we'll just call it a theory, that the Tsarnaev brothers were, at least Tamerlan, were involved in some way with the Jamestown group, that Tamerlan was recruited while he was over in, where was he? He was in the Caucasus region, but I can't remember.
Chechnya,
thank you very much. Evidence is mounting, according to this. Now, I realize that this is coming from Alex Jones, so bear with me on this, because I don't buy wholesale things that I find at sites that are given such prominent play.
Mm-hmm.
Drudge Report links to Alex Jones a lot. And, you know, yeah. Jones is probably a great guy. I don't know him personally, never met him. I just, you know, trust but verify. That's my thing. But according to this, and also Wayne Madsen, and also globalgovernance.ca, I've seen this meme on all of these sites, that Tamerlan Tsarnaev attended seminars run by the Caucasus Fund of Georgia, a group affiliated with a neoconservative think tank, the Jamestown Foundation, between January and July of 2012. The U.S. media has, I'm quoting the article at Alex Jones, the U.S. media has been reporting that during this six-month time frame, Tsarnaev was being radicalized by Dagestan radical imam Abu Duchan, killed in a fight with Russian security last year. So is it possible that this was all part of a big CIA covert operation?
It could be. The Jamestown Foundation looks like an interesting group. We need to do more research on these guys. Founded in 1984 as a platform to support Soviet dissidents. Today's stated mission is to inform and educate policymakers about events and trends, specifically in China, Russia, Eurasia, and the Middle East. World Island.
World Island.
Well, according to, I believe it was Zbigniew Brzezinski, it was, and I could be wrong about this, but there was a common idea amongst, you know, global thinkers that whoever controls the World Island, which is, you know, Europe and Russia, controls the world.
I'd say that that's probably true.
And I may be misstating that. That's a Dave Emery. Well, that's something Dave Emery talks about in his podcast quite a bit. But yeah, you mentioned Egypt in passing, by the way, and I wanted to pass along a story from KCEN Television in Texas, that is Waco, Killeen area. A group of soldiers are preparing for their deployment to Egypt with riot training on post. This is at Fort Hood.
Oh, we all know Fort Hood.
Right.
If that is not familiar to you, Derek.
Fort Hood, of course, is where Major Hassan, and I'm not remembering his last name, Major Hassan Fort Hood, Nadal Malik Hassan.
That's right.
Yes.
And he had been supposedly radicalized by someone who had left to the United States, or had he been radicalized via email?
Via email, and of course we droned the guy. It was the New Mexican the imam.
Yes, I'm trying
to
find.
Born in New Mexico.
I'll get it.
Names on the tip of my tongue, and people, I know you're out there already. Yeah, shouting out the name. Come on, you dummy.
Honey Hanjour?
No. The guy who was whose son was killed after that.
Anwar
al-Awlaki. Thank you. Can't believe I'd forgotten that name. Until we figure out how to put chips in our brains and improve the memory.
I probably had the whole brain over here, but Sam needed it, so he's got it right now.
And he's just snoring. That's no fair.
He's chewing on it.
So anyway, Fort Hood soldiers are, bottom line, this story, Fort Hood soldiers are being trained for riot control in Egypt, according to the story. They're planning for violent protests or riots and, quote, the possibility of protecting the country's border, meaning Egypt, the country's border with Israel. American soldiers inside Israel defending the border on behalf of the government run by the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, there was a riot just a little while ago in Egypt, but it was, looks to me like it had to do with, what's... Police clash at Morsi's palace. Water cannons used on the eighth day of the country's wave of political violence.
Huh.
This is...
So.
Oh, nope, sorry. Even though good old Google said that story was from 15 hours ago, it's talking about political violence. No way, maybe that's the setup to the story. You know, it's one of those, the actual story is buried down here at the bottom somewhere. Nearly 20 masked protesters are among hundreds arrested around the country the past week. The opening paragraph had to do with the February rioting. Brotherhood spokesman underlined on Friday that the group would not call its cadres into the streets. But that the young Brotherhood member said the group's members were ordered to gather in a mosque near the presidential palace as a precautionary measure in case anti-Morsi protests turned violent. So I thought Morsi was sort of cozy with the Muslim Brotherhood. Is he not?
He is Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, why is the Muslim... What's going on here? Okay. All right.
Well, anyway, bottom line is, what makes no sense to me is that American soldiers are being trained for deployment as riot control police and perhaps possible border defense in Egypt. Now, there's a couple of things wrong with this. First of all, is that we should be engaging in what seems like police activity inside a foreign nation. Secondly, is that we're expecting soldiers to behave like police. Police and soldiers are trained for completely different duties. Police are trained to keep the peace, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers, to borrow a line from the movie Aliens, are trained to break things and hurt people.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you know,
that's the last person you want policing.
And I don't mean that in a demeaning way, but that is the difference in the training of the police and of soldiers. Soldiers are not, yes, I realize that there are military police intended to keep the peace at military installations and in occupied zones. But for the most part, your average soldier on the ground is trained to kill and to break. And that's, and to be deployed in situations that require that kind of force.
I'm still confused. What is going on? What is it, a second wave to take down the Muslim Brotherhood? Because pro-democracy advocate Mohammed El-Baradei and a front leader described allegations that the front is making political compromises as intentional attempt to split the ranks. This is a quote from El-Baradei. "We toppled down Mubarak regime with a peaceful revolution." He tweeted this. "We insist on achieving the same goals, the same way, whatever the sacrifices and the barbaric suppression tactics." So is El-Baradei, is he trying to take down? I'm confused. Is he trying to lead a group to take down the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, it could be. I mean, El-Baradei may be the globalist candidate.
Wasn't his name floated as the one who would probably get the job originally?
But from what I could discern from the and understanding that the media and stories like this is essentially just another battlefield between the various power blocks, you know, jostling for control inside the country there, it seemed to me that El-Baradei was really not very well known inside Egypt. I mean, he's the face that many of us know from his time in the International Atomic Energy Agency. But inside Egypt, people are like, "Who are you?"
Yeah.
Whereas the Muslim Brotherhood, well, they've been engaging in community organizing. And seriously, they've been doing what Hamas and Hezbollah have done in the communities that serve as their power bases. They make sure food gets delivered. They make sure people get health care they need. I'm thinking
of
the Godfather movie. You know, it's basically,
so am I. It's exactly what I was thinking, except I was thinking about Chicago politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Those that make sure that the poor get fed
and
taken care of, because there are lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
They will vote for you. Well, you know, honestly, I have to be honest. If somebody came along and made sure that every need that I had was taken care of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I didn't have to really do a whole lot of work for it other than, you know, check a ballot box, what would I do?
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, you know, but taking it even beyond that, I mean, obviously there are people who are really self-serving and will look for those who promise them free stuff and, you know, take advantage of it. Had an unconfirmed report of somebody who came home through a neighborhood in St. Louis. Oh, what did I hear this about? A news broadcaster down in St. Louis who was filling in on a radio talk show down there. And I don't want to name names because I don't have the quote exact, but he basically made the comment that because of some traffic issues, accidents on the highways, he took a different route through work, came through a part of town he normally doesn't travel, and found, to his surprise, a little booth out there on the street corner with a big sign that said, "Get your free cellular phone," you know, and these are the so-called emergency phones that you and I, the American taxpayer, are paying for.
Isn't that a story that the guy from Big Government, the undercover film crew, that the Obama phones is what they're calling them. That's not my name. That's what they've been calling them.
And there are people who are happily taking the phones and turning on and reselling them so they can, you know, buy shoes or whatever. But there are people in situations where they are desperate. They're watching their children grow thinner and thinner before their eyes because they can't afford to put food on the table. And along comes someone and says, hey, we can get you a couple of bags of rice a day, or we can get you, you know, a couple pounds of flour a day. All we need for you to do is, here, just, you know, hold this package, and then, you know, in a few days, a guy will come to collect it. And, you know, what are you going to do? When you're desperate enough and your children are hungry, will you do that and not ask questions?
And as a Christian, you have to ask yourself, how does this fall in line with what I'm asked to do as a believer?
Yeah.
Am I breaking the rules here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm not works-based. I'm not. I believe that salvation is a free gift, you know, paid for by Jesus Christ. And our job is to accept it or reject it. But we also have certain behaviors that we're told to model as Christians so we can show the world that we're different.
Mm-hmm. There's a letter that I read to a guy who writes a popular blog. And this fellow was asking the question. He said, well, you know, I'm a Bible-believing Christian, but I work for a company that's taken a public stance in favor of homosexuality. And there was some internal website where this policy was announced or some such thing, some article, you know, about, you know, the homosexual lifestyle. But they, whoever the webmaster was, left the comments section on the blog open. And there were a couple of Christians who worked for this company, not the gentleman writing the letter, but others who had posted some comments. But he noticed when he went back to the article later in the day, those comments had been expunged. But the other comments, the ones that were favorable toward the company policy, were left alone. So this guy was asking the question, should I continue working for this company? And he said, it's a good job. I enjoy what I do. I'm paid well. But as a Christian, you know, where should I draw the line? And I think that's a really good question and some soul searching, you know, required. You know, he can't be held accountable for the actions of those who set policy for the company.
No.
And I'm certain that there are Christians back in the day during Roman times who were either employed by, or perhaps even, because we know for a fact that there were some slaves who had accepted Christianity. Paul wrote about Philemon,
mm-hmm.
or wrote the letter to Philemon about the slave Onesimus.
Yes, exactly.
Who had run away. And he was encouraging Onesimus to go back to his master. And that was a case where there were two Christians involved in that relationship. But what if you were a Christian slave of a pagan master? Do you keep
still
working
go
for
back.
Him? You know, do you run away? So, you know, these are things we have to ask. And I think, prophetically speaking, more to the point, what if we are still here? I don't know. I don't think we will be. But what if we're still here and we're told you can't buy or sell unless you take that mark, whatever that mark happens to be? Do you deny? Do you refuse and then watch your children starve?
But that's clear cut. That is a clear cut example. You are asked to do something that is absolutely contrary to what a Christian believes. I can't worship you because I worship God.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Jesus Christ is my Savior, not you. However, if you work for a company that has public statements that are contrary to your own, then you're going to have to pray about it and search your soul. Now, if the company head comes to you and says, you know, our company supports gay rights, I want you to march with me in support of gay rights.
Yeah.
That may be a little bit different.
Yeah, I'd say at that point, that's when you'll have to, you know, really... Yeah, the decision will have to be made. Maybe not to quit, but to take the risk of saying, I'm sorry, this is... contrary to what I believe to be righteous behavior, and I can't do it.
Okay, here's another question. The question about the guy who works for a company that supports gay rights. What about if you work for a company that supports doing drugs?
Mm.
What if you work for a company that sells drugs that you know are harmful? What if you work for a company that... encourages employees to drink on the job.
As long as it's not to excess, I don't...
Well, exactly. I mean, you can go down that road. You are never, ever going to find a human boss that makes perfect choices. Never.
That's a good point.
So you have to ask yourself, at what point am I being asked to do something that is absolutely contrary to my walk as a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The choice you make may not be the one that I ultimately make. I don't know.
And that's where this personal accountability and this thinking thing.
This free will thing.
Yeah, just give me a list of rules that I can follow. That's, thinking is hard.
Yes, that's why that's why cults that have lists of rules to follow, why they're so popular.
Why they're so popular, absolutely. Back to Syria for just a moment.
To get serious?
Yes. My own comments here. I think this is a dangerous game that the Obama administration is playing. And sadly, with buffoons like Joe Biden running around in public making statements, I have some very serious misgivings about how, and after watching the debacle in Benghazi and the administration's buffoonish attempts to cover it up after the fact, I don't have a really good feeling that anything that they plan to do in Syria is going to be executed well. Vladimir Putin has said, hey, we're going to help President Assad.
And he's already said he would station troops along the Golan Heights.
Yep. And the Turkish government of Tayyip Erdogan has said that he will not allow Turkey to be used as a transshipment point for U.S. and NATO arms to the Syrian rebels. So,
At least today, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, American troops are now being shifted to Jordan and stationed in Jordan. This is according to Debga.com.
Hmm.
And meanwhile, we still really don't know who the Syrian rebels are. This is an Associated Press report from a couple of days ago. The Syrian opposition is fractured into many different groups, many of which we know, and it's been openly disclosed, are loyal to Al-Qaeda. So we're going to send American arms to Al-Qaeda. Only light weapons, although Senator John McCain says, oh, this is crazy. We need heavy weaponry, anti-tank, anti-plane. We need a no-fly zone. But there are some anecdotes of the kind of things that are happening in Syria because these groups don't get along. A shipment of humanitarian goods was held up for 2 weeks because opposition groups couldn't agree over whose label should be attached to the boxes. Planes filled with aid have landed in countries bordering Syria with no trucks at the landing sites to transport the aid from those planes into Syria. And in Cairo, money that the United States was prepared to give to an opposition political office were rejected, the official said, speaking on condition of anonymity, because they didn't want the money going to people that they were opposed to. So this is so...
It sounds like a replay of Afghanistan.
It
does. Except there, we were backing the rebels, or Al-Qaeda, in their war with Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there have been American politicians, God love them, who've said, you know, the weapons we give these guys today are going to likely be turned on American soldiers at some point down the road. And that's exactly what's happened in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Hey, we sell guns to Mexicans. Why not sell them to, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, Mexican drug cartels. So that's, what a world.
Well, let me ask you this. If a meteorite's about to hit the planet, where do you go? I know.
My brand new my brand new meteorite shelter.
Well,
only $39.95 from PIDCO.
Earl Scheib will paint it. Actually, there are a couple of places. One is in Indiana, and another one. You can tell my family come from Kentucky. Another one is in Kansas.
Really?
You know how around the St. Louis area we've all got all those limestone caves?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Indiana has lots of limestone caves, too, and underground facilities.
Mm-hmm.
A gentleman named, let me get his name here, Robert Vicino, has decided that his company, Vivos, which means life, of course, mm-hmm. Is going to provide shelter to people who sign up in advance and I believe it's about $50,000 plus, mm-hmm. and the plus being you have to pay so much per foot, linear foot, of your RV that you plan on bringing in there. He's turning these underground caverns into huge underground shelters. And he said that they will also be used, you know, just in case nothing hits and they're just there, that they'll be used as training facilities for yeah. survival methods.
Does this guy have bleach blonde hair and speak with a German accent like this?
He might, except his name's Ficino. You know what?
This is really interesting that you mention this, though, because I had flagged this one as well. When we were in Columbia, Missouri, back in 06 and 07, mm-hmm. there was a business that I went with one of our account executives to call on. There was a fella who had opened a business near Columbia to provide storage facilities in climate-controlled underground caves.
Yes. And that goes on, I think, in St. Louis as well, because these are areas that you can put long-term, either digital, you can put servers down there. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that these things underground are. And the reason I bring all this up, and I'm glad you flagged it too.
Go ahead. Well, I just a quick rabbit trail. You mentioned the St. Louis area. I mean, those caves and caverns have been used for a long time. We, you know, the St. Louisans were around this early on. Why do you think Anheuser-Busch was based in St. Louis? That's where they put all the beer before the days of artificial refrigeration.
So what Falstaff, you're saying.
Falstaff was
if,
in there?
Yeah. If a meteorite is going to hit the earth, not only can we go underground?
That's right.
But there's a bunch of beer down there, too.
Beer and wine, yes. Great wine cellars down there, too.
You'll
yes.
never know the meteorite hit because you'll be so passed out.
He won't care.
You yeah. won't
okay.
care.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
No. The reason I brought all this up is because in the book of Revelation, we are told that when all of these events begin to happen, the judgments that God is, you know, throwing down to the earth, they hide in caves. And they say to the rocks, hide us mm-hmm. from the wrath of the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
Hide us.
Yeah.
Well, this is exactly what this guy is selling. He's selling places underground where the rocks will hide you.
It's only fair, though. I mean, the government has the ring of, what do they call it? I did all this research back before I wrote the novel of The God Conspiracy, the arc of...
yes, I know what you're talking about.
Continuity of government. That's it. The COG... facilities around Washington, D.C., ranging from Mount Weather to, Site R in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. Southeast Pennsylvania, near, I'm going to forget the name of the town. I did all kinds of reading on this back seven, eight years ago as preparation for writing the novel.
I'm glad you brought up COG because I just saw an article. Let's rabbit trail like crazy. Just saw an article the other day that supposedly when the Bush administration... essentially declared a state of emergency after 9/11, that continuity of government was, the rules were changed, and it never went out. In other words, it's that bunch of underground people mm-hmm. are still operating and running the government. Now, there's your story. Yeah. Huh? The chuds are running the government.
It's like the stories that come out every now and again about the Japanese soldiers who finally, you know, come out of the forests in Okinawa or wherever, you know, 40 years later, not aware that World War II is way over. These guys,
or they come out and suddenly they're in Red World.
In fringe reference there. That would be a funny story. Somebody accidentally flips a switch, communication in the outside world cut off, and the people down these continuity government bunkers assume that the world has been blasted into a radioactive hell, and they're going to rebuild everything from scratch down there.
Somewhere, someone's sitting in front of a word processing program, and they're starting this story.
And some guy with that Peter Sellers look and accent, yes, only the most fit.
But there is a place also in Indiana, and the site there is undisclosed, but supposedly it's already done. You can buy your spot.
Huh.
So, honey, that $50,000 that we don't have?
Yes, that would be, $50,000 per adult, $35,000 per child, according to the article. Actual sales won't begin until a critical mass of reservations are received and processed.
Actual what?
Critical mass of reservations are received and processed.
Okay. Deep in the bowels of an eastern Kansas mine.
There is the basis of a story.
There truly is.
Oh, man. Well,
we have to talk about the Michael Hastings thing before we leave today.
Oh, absolutely. This is something that just occurred within the last couple of days. Michael Hastings, an investigative reporter whose name you might not know, but you probably are familiar with at least some of his work, was killed. And you know, I've not had the time to do much research on this. All I remember reading was that he was driving a fairly new Mercedes-Benz, and the car exploded, basically. I mean, you know, this is not like the old Ford Pinto that you know, with a gas tank would ignite upon impact, apparently. Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes-Benz is not known as a vehicle that suffers from this kind of a design flaw.
I'm trying to find the actual original report because it was a one-car accident. He supposedly struck a light post or something like that, and the car exploded.
Yeah.
There have been reports from ear witnesses, whatever you want to call them, that there was a big bang.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, honestly, an eyewitness is not the greatest testimony because you tend to sort of confabulate after the fact. And I've read an article. Okay, well, that reminded me that this happened. But so that may or may not mean anything. But he has, it's come out that he supposedly sent, and I think I saved that here.
Yeah, Jennifer Robinson, the WikiLeaks lawyer. Contacted her a few hours before he died, saying that the FBI was investigating him.
Here's what the email sent to Hastings' colleagues, in which Joseph Biggs, Staff Sergeant Joseph Biggs, was blind copied. Hastings was embedded with Joseph Biggs' unit in 2008 in Afghanistan. Hey, friends, there's a blank there because the person to whom it actually was addressed is not there. The feds are interviewing my close friends and associates. Close friends and associates is in quotes. Perhaps if the authorities arrive, BuzzFeed GQ or HQ may be wise to immediately request legal counsel before any conversations or interviews about our news gathering practices or related journalism issues. Also, I'm on to a big story and need to go off the radar for a bit. All the best and hope to see you all soon, Michael. That was supposedly sent just 15 hours or so before he died.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was a freelance writer. He contributed to BuzzFeed. He contributed to Current TV. He wrote articles that appeared in Rolling Stone magazine.
In fact, it was the McChrystal article that appeared in Rolling Stone.
Right. And that's the one that would likely... you would be familiar with the article that he wrote about General Stanley McChrystal, who was at the time commanding U.S. forces in Afghanistan, led to McChrystal's
departure.
Yeah. Resignation in air quotes. Yeah. So what he was working on, we don't know.
We don't even know for sure that this email really came from him.
Right. And the other thing we want to be cautious of is not contributing to a growing web, if you will, of unsubstantiated conspiracy theories about Hastings, but it does seem a little unusual and interesting too. Maybe not unusual. I mean, typically when somebody's killed, his age is mentioned in the articles, but he was 33.
And it's mentioned over and over again, which of course probably is just a coincidence, but we have to mention it because in some of these things, numbers are a nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, do a little more digging on that, and we'll probably post links to more articles about Michael Hastings and his demise at our Twitter feed, which, by the way, you can subscribe to, which is at PID Radio on Twitter.com.
That's right. And if you want to contribute to the $50,000 fee that we'll be paying, I don't know what they're going to charge for Sam.
Yeah, for all three. Maybe we can get a discount.
Actually, I bet we could.
Yeah.
We'll broadcast from underneath there. If you'll give us a discount, he'll say, no, no, we're going to charge you more.
Yeah. Tell you what, we can get you in for only $15,000 on the B arc.
The one heading to the sun? Yay! Come on, everybody. Gray skies are going to clear up.
Oh, wow. Amazing. In one sentence, without even a breath in between, we managed to reference Douglas Adams and The Simpsons. How about that?
I know.
So anyway, yeah, that is something to be aware of. Hastings perhaps following in the footsteps of Gary Webb, the San Jose Mercury News reporter, who broke the story about the CIA distributing crack cocaine on American streets, who was then suicided with two shots to the head.
Or Danny Casolaro, who was found dead in his motel.
Here's kind of an odd story, and this comes to us by way of Extraordinary Intelligence, the website that is run by Natalina, who, by the way, is now doing her own podcast.
Oh, good for her.
First episode up just the other night. I listened to the beginning of it, didn't have a chance to listen through to more than about the first 20 minutes or so. It was last night after I came home from the barbershop chorus show. Yes, we do have normal lives in a kind of an abnormal way. She had some really
good... What part of barbershop is normal?
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
It is... she had some very good audio, and kudos to her for getting this. She played two audio clips. One was Barack Obama 2007 talking about how the Bush administration was breaking all sorts of constitutional restrictions on the power of the presidency with NSA spying. And then in 2013, Barack Obama saying, well, we need to balance privacy against security. And, you know, these things were all done within the framework of the Constitution. Right.
Okay. To be fair, let me say that in 2000, mm-hmm. when George Bush was running against Al Gore, Bush was asked about nation building, and he said he was not in the least in favor of nation building. That is not what the military should be used for. And, mm-hmm. of course, he went on to use the military for nation building.
Right, yeah. So they tell you what you want to hear during the election, after the election. Yeah.
Has it been an hour? He just got up.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, 56 minutes and 40 seconds.
Sam, you are good.
German efficiency. Natalina posted this link to a story from London. An ancient Egyptian statue, 4,000-year-old Egyptian statue, being displayed in a case in a London museum, is apparently moving on its own. No, I'm sorry. This is in Manchester, England, not London. It is spinning in place on its axis, rotating about 180 degrees. It's a 10-inch tall relic found in a mummy's tomb, and curators apparently keep finding the statue facing the wrong way. So they set up a time-lapse camera on this little statue, and sure enough, it shows the little statuette spinning in place, rotating around with nobody going near it. And the curator says, I'm the only one with the key.
Oh, that is creepy.
Yeah. This has been... Now, let's see. What is the some of the details here on the museum? It is in the Manchester Museum. The statue is of a man named Neb Sinu. It's seen to remain still at night, but slowly rotates round during the day. This according to the Manchester Evening News. The curator, Campbell Price, says, I am the only one who has a key. I put it back, but then the next day it moved again. We set up a time-lapse video, and although the naked eye can't see it, you can clearly see it rotate on the film. And the statuette is something that used to go in the tomb along with the mummy. Mourners would lay offerings at its feet. The hieroglyphics on the back ask for bread, beer, and beef, which, you know, it's kind of like a good meal at a sports bar. But anyway, in ancient Egypt, they believed that if the mummy was destroyed, then the statuette could act as an alternative vessel for the spirit. And Mr. Price then adds, maybe that is what causes the movement.
I see that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a reason why these statues were used over and over again and are still used to represent quote-unquote gods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if, in fact, there is no scientific explanation, and it is curious that it only started doing this recently. I mean, there's some who suggest that vibrations from people, visitors to the museum walking across the floor may cause it to vibrate and move, mm-hmm. since it's only happening during the day and not at night.
Yes.
That's possible. It is possible that something more is happening here. But I would say it's probably not God who's doing it.
Probably not. I'd say change the location and see if it still happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Test it out. So anyway, kind of an odd story, but you'll find the link there at extraordinaryintelligence.com. We didn't even talk about Edward Snowden the NSA whistleblower.
Everybody's talking about him.
I just want to raise one question because I've not heard anybody even mention this except for Nancy Pelosi, of all people. And that was a frightening thing. It's like, oh, why am I agreeing with Nancy Pelosi on this? Why are we allowing private contractors to serve in a capacity where they have access to this sort of NSA spying power? Why are private contractors even in the loop on something?
Because they make great fall guys. That's why when you want to out some information, you filter it through and then you blame the person who blabbed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My question is, did he really blab it, quote unquote? Because he is the source of the information. That was it, the Guardian that originally published it?
Right.
Or is he simply the figurehead? I mean, all we see is a picture of this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it just some actor's picture?
we don't know. Again, it gets down to, you know, trust and verify. I mean, I assume that the media sources that are reporting that he's left Hong Kong and is headed for Venezuela by way of Russia and Cuba are telling the truth and know who he is and can authenticate that he actually exists. But for all we know, this could be some random guy whose pictures have been pulled from Facebook. Oh, and incidentally, the former security chief for Facebook,
mm-hmm.
now working for the NSA.
Now, that's not a surprise at all.
I know. It's one of those things. It's either, gee, this is really weird, or, gosh, that makes perfect sense.
Exactly.
Kind of stories. So anyway, Snowden, if he's a private contractor, because this is a topic I discussed with an author, well, 6 years ago, back in Columbia, R.J. Hillhouse, who had written a novel called Outsourced, about mm-hmm. the outsourcing of American intelligence, touched on this in that book. But then she wrote a blog for several years called The Spy Who Billed Me, and she raised a very interesting question. If you have contractors such as Booz Allen Hamilton who have access to this private information, this intelligence information, which is used to compile the president's daily briefing, a USA Today condensed version of what is really important for the president to take note of, what is the chance, what are the odds that one of these contractors who may have business interests that are influenced by American foreign policy, whether it's an oil company or a defense contractor or a banking interest, would tweak the report given to the president so that his decisions benefit their other businesses?
Cha. And military industrial complex.
Yeah. And by the way, just coincidence, I'm sure that former CIA director Mike McConnell has kind of bounced back and forth between government service and Booz Allen Hamilton. Coincidence, nothing to see here, just move along. So anyway, just a point to consider when all this is being discussed. Why are we spending more than half of our national budget on private contractors?
Well,
yeah.
That's a huge...
It's an involuntary transfer of wealth from you and me to the folks who are connected to the government.
It is, but there are lots of reasons. One of them is that they can get away with, you know, they don't have to show the budget to Congress. They don't have to get approved through Congress. Mm-hmm. If they're simply funneling lots of money to a private, quote-unquote, contractor. And this deniability thing. Well, I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
We never gave them that, you know, provenance. We never said that you could do the following.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it.
Oh. And the funny thing is that we're hearing that kind of, you know, phony outrage coming from our elected officials. Well, how did this high school dropout get access to this information anyway? Come on. I think the question to ask is, how are these private contractors benefiting from having access to all of this information about you and me and our buying habits and our purchase and our private lives?
The big question, of course, that is being asked, is he a double agent? Is he a triple agent? Is he any kind of an agent?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he, as you say, some picture that's been pulled from, you know, like Flickr or something?
Some guy who is working dinner theater in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
Well, these and many other questions must remain unanswered until next time. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm still Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.